Hello and welcome to AFP. My name is Devang Desai and I'm joined by the usual suspects, David Goss and Nick Andrade. On today's show, we chat a frantic MLS free agency period. We go over some of the moves and what they mean for the league, plus a roundup of the latest international news with World Cup qualifiers coming up fast, some sad news about Alphonso Davies, which we'll touch on, of course, and of course, all of your questions on the mailbag, Ask AFP. Fellas, the band is back together. We're all here for once at the same time.
The usual suspects are back.
Is it usual suspects if at this point, like 33% of our life has existed without it in the history of this show?
Definitely playing fast and loose with some definitions here, but come on, I gotta take this because we hit a milestone somewhere along the way recently, but we have crossed 100,000 all-time listens across the life of this podcast. Whoa.
Snaps.
Guess what, DeBang? We're not going to play Cool in the Gang, okay? That's just off the table completely.
From now on, the celebration music is just a smattering of applause that Nick did. It's kind of like a week, couple claps, and that's it. That's all we got to do here. But no, seriously.
Very open mic of us.
Yeah, it's should be proud of this, gents, and very happy to be back doing the show. David, Planes, Trains, Automobiles, explain how we were led to believe you were coming to Toronto only for you to never come and have us waiting at Pearson Airport, waiting at the Pearson Airport arrivals like some fools. Explain yourself.
In fairness, Devang, you always would have been waiting like a fool because I'm a Porter Billy Bishop guy. So wow. I wouldn't have showed up at Pearson anyway. yeah, man, it's been a bit of a whirlwind. I was in Vegas for work, not MLS related, for the Drone Racing League. And you can watch it on February 5th and 20th on NBC. And I won't be on it because I was doing in-house emceeing. But you can watch it and you know that I was there. So I was in Vegas and then I was traveling for the Super Draft and I was told, basically, I could end up anywhere, and I was just never told where I was going to go because there was like so many moving parts. So I was hopefully going to Toronto to help cover Insigne signing and draft, and then I was told through my producers that that was no longer happening, and then I was going to Seattle, and then I was going to Colorado, and then I was potentially going to some player's house, and then I wasn't, and then I was going somewhere else. So then what, draft was on a Tuesday? And I think the Saturday before, I was finally told that I was going to Durham, North Carolina, to the campus of Duke University, the Blue Devils.
Wow.
And not going to Toronto.
Wait a minute, though. If you found out on Saturday, you sent us a jet emoji on Sunday because you had said that it was the New York Jets. So you knew you were going to Nashville, but then you didn't tell us. So then we were expecting you at the airport. I remember, I think I was texting with DeBang and he's like, yeah, I'm not sure when he's coming in. And I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be great. We're going to get to meet David finally. And so you knew, but you didn't tell us. You just left us.
I was playing pretty fast and loose with plans over the course of the holiday weekend. There was a lot of people who thought I was coming to their city and I ended up going to none of them. And I pretty much mentioned to no one that it didn't happen. So I apologize for that. But I will say, I would have loved to hang out in North Carolina if you had chosen to come down there.
We have been pummeled with snow in Toronto today as we record this. So I too would like to live in Durham, North Carolina, perhaps for a few weeks at least.
I don't know.
I'm glad you didn't show up here, David, though, because it's not the ideal time to visit, hopefully, in the summer. You can come watch Lorenzo Insigne live.
Do we think that I'm allowed in the country? That was the other problem, was getting in and out of the country. It's not the easiest thing in the world. Do you think I'm going to be allowed in? And do you think, as of where we stand right now, and everyone listening, please go into the Discord, tweet at me, whatever, if you know more. For the USA-Canada game, will I be allowed in a stadium and will I be allowed in Canada?
I think you would be allowed in Canada. I have a feeling that they will not have fans at that game, though.
Yep.
We're getting close to the date, soon. But I wonder if they will, because I think technically in Ontario, the 26th is when they're going to review this this lockdown that they've had. And depending on how things are looking, they'll make a decision going forward. But it's a good question. There's some hockey games, some basketball games that are scheduled beyond that 26th date. that I think they're thinking there'll be fans there, though. But I really don't know, man. I think it's 50-50.
Okay. Well, I am committed that if I am allowed in the stadium and in the city and country, the province, whatever, I don't know who's restricting me in this scenario, that I am coming on the 30th or around the 30th for that game. That seems to be up in the air as well.
It's excellent foreshadowing because we're going to be talking about CONCACAF stuff a bit later on in the show. A reminder, folks, we are on patreon.com/afootballpodcast. We hit our original goal for patrons. Thank you so much to everyone that helped us do that. And once you join us over there, you get access to the Discord, you get the show ad-free, you get it early as well when it's produced by our wonderful team, including producer Greg. So head on over to patreon.com/afootballpodcast and join today. When we come back, MLS Roundup free agency? What? It's real? Actual big moves are happening. TFC making more moves. We talk about all that coming up next after the break. Welcome back to AFP. Well, it's been a hell of a long time since I've talked to you guys about MLS transfers or anything really MLS related. So we missed a whole lot. I mean, New York City FC won, blah, blah, blah. Good for them. But
Devang, when was the last time you were on this show?
Long before that. Way before that. I think Decision Day. Last time I was on here was Decision Day, I think.
Did you make picks for MLS Cup? Have we gone back and checked?
They were wrong. Don't worry. They were wrong. Yeah. I will reiterate, though, there is something really funny about the team hosting MLS Cup losing the game. I think beyond the time it happened to TFC and it broke my heart, it is genuinely enjoyable to see the reactions and the pain expressions on the fans who are experiencing true tragedy like the Portland Timbers did. So I enjoyed that final. I enjoyed most of all, though, when we got to the silly season, that is the off season, we've already had some massive moves, including Lorenzo Insigne, which we talked about with Stevie Caldwell last week. But DG, this is like the first time, I think, that we've seen free agency in MLS involve true, quote unquote, game breakers / superstars. And it's no longer about journeyman center backs or goalkeepers. It's about people like Albert Rusnak choosing to join Seattle and creating quite the formidable squad. I guess it's just top line. How do you feel about it? I mean, this feels like a bit like the other big four sports, right? In the sense that free agency is taking on new meaning.
It's something that as you said, we've never had before because free agency didn't exist in MLS. And then with each CBA, the Players Association have sort of fought for it, but it was so hard to hit the requirements and parameters. I think it was over the age of 28 and like 8 years of experience in the league and all this stuff before. And then now it's finally dropped down to 24 years old and 5 years of experience. And so we're really starting to see, as you mentioned, like a genuine bulk of players that are worth signing, that teams would fight for, as well as big names like Rusnak, who's a designated player, 11 goals, 11 assists last year, started every single game of the season for Salt Lake and, you know, a legitimate game changer in this league. And this is brand new. It's exciting. Devang, I think the most exciting part for me is we've started to see teams be a little bit looser with trades in the league over the last few years, but there are a lot of good players in this league that are on the wrong team, whether it's system, right, whether it's the personality of the coach, whether it's a lifestyle thing where they need to leave the city they're in. And so that's the most exciting part to me is the idea that players in this league that I already like, that I already enjoy watching, that I think have good personalities, whatever it is, they can now start to find the right fit for them as, you know, as a club and as a setup. And I don't know that Rusnak's an example of that, but I think some of the other guys we're seeing sign and go to different clubs make a ton of sense.
In a roundabout sort of way, I think decisions like Miami reportedly has taken with Blaz Matuidi moving on from him and kind of restarting the project a bit under Phil Neville is a good sign. Not to say that Matuidi's got nothing left of the tank and he probably will keep playing somewhere, but I think that version of Inter Miami wasn't working and they pivoted perhaps to a more localized model. I think they have to change a lot of things, but I saw I saw Nani go to Italy, and I was like, what the hell? He's going to Serie A at this point, and I'm seeing trades like Kellen Acosta being moved from Colorado to LAFC. And I think the age-old question, and it's one that we dealt with last week when talking about Richie Lorea and moving to Nottingham Forest, it's no longer, I think, about players making that big leap in their career-wise and leaving MLS for Europe. I think we've seen that time and time again, but the transfers that I've seen the last couple of weeks have been super intriguing for different reasons. I think Nani is a different story and we could talk about him, but the competition between the teams and the trades that they're willing to make within the league are now more the focal point than maybe selling on guys for their future. I think that aspect of player movement has taken on new meaning.
What's nice is there are teams that are operating in different ways. So the sell-on stuff is still of value. I mean, clearly, FC Dallas has not signed a player of consequence. Well, they haven't signed anyone this year so far, which I'm sure will change to some extent. They haven't really signed anyone over the last few years. Right. They haven't signed anyone from inside of Major League Soccer, I think, for the last 3 years. But they've just sold $40 million worth of players overseas. So what matters to FC Dallas is different than what matters to Chicago, LAFC, Charlotte FC and Toronto, right? Like there are all these different teams in different markets. And as the league opens up a bit, and you mentioned Nani, obviously some of the young players, like now the world has opened up a bit to MLS. You can operate in different ways and different styles. But I go back to the idea of like Austin FC signed Maxi Arruti. Maxi Arruti is not going to change anyone's world, but I think he's a good fit there. And that they're a better team now than they were 5 days ago or 10 days ago, whenever they signed him. And I think free agency allows that function, allows that movement to happen in this league, as well as then the international trading. So, Devang, here's a question for you, because you brought up Nani and everyone else. So Edward Atuesta gets sold to Palmeiras, right? Biggest team in South America, or Flamengo. I should probably just look this up because it's not that hard. gets sold to the biggest team in Brazil, which is the biggest team in the Americas. Now there's rumors out that Barco and Brian Rodriguez also might be brought down to Brazil. Right. And obviously, we'll talk about Jefferson Soteldo in a second. Do you think it's a positive or a negative that players from MLS are being sold to Brazil and not to Europe? Or do you just not care?
Generally, I think it is good. I think the free movement of players is good and should be something that is not frowned upon. And I think it's curious how people see the Brazilian league from, at least from North America. I've heard some really whacked out opinions about Brazilian football that does not respect it at all. And like talks a lot of shit, but I think clearly we can see that they're still producing a boatload of excellent players. The fact that the pipeline might be going the other way isn't a bad thing. I think it's interesting to see clubs like Atlanta maybe acknowledge mistakes were made, or perhaps they had the wrong player on the team, like you mentioned, and like not doubling down on Barco and being like, let's just keep doing this because it clearly wasn't working. I think that is a positive generally. I was looking at some just generally what has happened or player movement since the window opened, like Thomas Pochettino going from Austin to River Plate and then them deciding to bring in Arruti. Like if you said that happened a year ago, or we were going to say a year from now, this is the move that's happening, I think everyone is devastated probably that something has gone terribly wrong. But I don't think the fit was good at all. And they realized that Pochettino probably wasn't the level of player they thought he was at this point. And so Austin decided to pivot, which I don't think is a bad thing. Even though it looks perhaps like it's a bit of a failure, it's like, well, we have to try something different.
Yeah. And I totally agree with you. Now, the biggest thing that I come away with is the ability to kind of move. Well, first of all, it blows my mind that a player that Austin FC isn't saying is 100% a guy we need to have can go to River Plate. Like the fact that the league has elevated to that moment is mind blowing, because it used to be if a player came from River Plate's MLS, to me, it was a life changing move. And, you know, I remember when Marcelo Gallardo came, and obviously Guillermo Barros-Skelotto and Juan Pablo Angel and players of that quality. And like, that's the guys you're sort of talking about. So alone, the fact that a guy in his prime is going to go back, and he's not the only one, by the way, because it sounds like Leandro Gonzalez Pires is also going to go. And I think Boca Juniors is about to sign another MLS player as well. So the fact that the teams of that quality around the world value MLS players and the players that are in this league are capable of playing at that level, on the one hand, is mind-blowing. And then the other is you can get out of these players, as you said, which is huge, because before MLS was part of the world market, you made that gamble and you were stuck with it. No one else was going to take that player from you because, well, that player clearly is looking for something else because they went to MLS, right? They've moved on from being competitive. What all the terms or whatever people were using, because MLS was a retirement league and unique and weird and different and all those things, all of that goes away. And now you bring in a player of Soteldo's quality as Toronto FC and it doesn't work out. And within a year, you can move him. And it sounds like potentially flip him for a Mexican national team center back. And if not, just getting off his contract is important enough for a team like Toronto, especially in the structure that MLS is, to move on. And that wasn't possible in the past. And I think that only happens as you enter the fluid market where you're consistently bringing players in from these leagues and sending players out. And while maybe Atuesta should have gone to Europe and shown how good MLS is and sort of like carried that flag, if him going to Brazil means that Barco and Brian Rodriguez, that the league gets money for those players and can replace them with players who maybe can produce at a higher level in this league, I think that alone is worth it as a person who likes MLS and cares about the growth and structure of this league.
You mentioned this trade, quote unquote. I think we can call this a trade, kind of, with TFC and Tigres and the rumors of Jefferson Soteldo going to Mexico for Carlos Salcido. I love the way this has come about, in the sense that this does seem like a straight up one for one trade, and they're trying to, I guess, make this pass the test of whatever international transfer certificate they need to create here. But seems like a win-win for both sides, in the sense that Soteldo can clearly play. I don't think he's a bad player. I think people, at least in Toronto, have a pretty hardened viewpoint of him, or it's either like he's a baller or he's a complete waste. I think, going back to kind of the theme, David, just an awful fit, maybe the worst fit of a big acquisition that TFC has had in quite a while. And he didn't mesh with the other star players. He didn't mesh potentially in the locker room. I'm not sure those are confirmed reports, but I knew it was not necessarily a happy place. I think he had to go, but he's got talent and he can clearly play. Thus, Tigres wants him and is ready to give up someone that TFC desperately needs, as we've watched their backline get carved 8 million times last year.
With Soteldo not working, and I was obviously very high on this move, and I still am, he had 3 goals and 10 assists in about two-thirds of a season.
Flashes, baby.
But that's two-thirds of a season, which if you extrapolate it out means he's sort of potentially pushing 16 or 17 assists. And yeah, you'd like to see the goal scoring up. And that's his first year with Toronto, right? And he doesn't even get a full season. He doesn't get a preseason. So if you assume that even just having preseason, knowing the squad better, feeling more comfortable, he would be better this year, you're looking at a guy who's easily going double and double, but you're looking at a guy who's probably pushing close to 10 goals and 20 assists, which is an incredible season. So while he did struggle and he was the wrong player, he still showed his talent, still had success statistically. And then you look at Tigres and you're talking about a team that starts Florian Thauvin on the wings. They just bought Sebastian Cordova, a Mexican national team. I think he should be a starter, but borderline starter. And they are saying this guy's good enough to play for us, and we want him to be a difference maker. So it shows you the perception around the world of this player still, and shows you that even, I guess what I'm trying to say is, in this league, even that's not enough. 3 goals, 10 assists, what he did, it wasn't enough for Toronto to just win with him. And maybe it's not enough to show that he was productive for his contract, which shows you how hard it is to win in this league and how much more competitive it's gotten. And it is mind-blowing to me, again, with the River Plate thing, that Tigres, the best team in the region over the last 10 now plus years, the highest spending team in the region by far for the last 10 plus years, that this is, they look at themselves, they see that they're struggling, and they say, this is how we can solve it, is going to get this guy from Toronto FC, which is amazing and which is awesome. And as you said, it's perfect that it works out both ways. We've heard Salcedo rumors coming back to MLS for 2+ years now, pretty much since the World Cup. I interviewed him in Salt Lake, which is where he came through RSL's academy as a kid before he went down to Mexico. He's Mexican American, and then went down and was in Chivas's academy, and that's where he broke through to the pro ranks. And he was so excited to be back, and he really multiple times expressed how he felt MLS had changed his life and changed his career, and how excited he would be to come back. So I think he's going to be a really good addition if that is the move. I don't love him all the time as a defender. I think he takes risks and gets caught, but he's uber athletic in a way to cover for other players. And I think when you look at Toronto right now, you're looking at a team that can't rebuild their backline because they just don't have the cap flexibility. And so you're going to need someone who can help other players get by, especially after losing Richie. And I think he does have that ability.
By committee, Shade O'Neill, Chris Mavinga, who they might have to rebuild a bit confidence-wise. Salcedo, it's the workings of maybe a rejuvenated defense, but a long way to go there. Just on the TFC front, David, Dom Dwyer was dealt in a draft day deal to Dallas. I think we learned then the contract he had signed, which, what? I had to do a triple take when I saw that. On that note, what have you liked the most of the moves so far? Like, I guess what's caught your eye?
In all of MLS or for Toronto?
All of MLS. I mean, if it's a Toronto move, sure, but all of the league?
No, it's not a Toronto move. That's why I was asking.
We could talk about that contract for a while, because what the hell? I knew desperate for goal scoring, they needed some backup for Josie, but that was a head scratcher.
It was just odd because it felt like Dom was desperate. So where are you in a situation where you have to guarantee him a second year? That's what the problem was. The problem isn't the money. If you've signed him to a contract where the option is a high number and he plays well, and then you want to pick up that option, great. But to guarantee him money coming off of being just bought out, and it just felt like clearly it was a desperate move for Toronto. And it will take more than a year for Toronto to build themselves or to dig themselves out of the hole that they've put themselves in. And that's why the Insigne move is so interesting. I think on top of obviously his name, his quality is, this feels like a Bill Manning move because Bob Bradley wasn't in the door before this started. And so you're bringing Bob Bradley in to recreate your club, and not saying it will be a bad thing, but you're saddling him with the biggest signing in league history rather than giving him time to sort of read the club and say, this is the move we need to make. But outside of that, I will say actually one of the more interesting moves has been the Alistair Johnston trade. And just one, it's the right move for Montreal. Center back was a huge hole in their setup, and they're saving so much money on losing Kiki Struna and Rudy Camacho that you have the money then to trade for Alistair Johnston. But it's interesting now, I think we've crossed the line in this league of the willingness to accept guys, where it used to be, I'm not going to trade that for a super draft pick. And people would almost ignore the player and they would sort of just look at the profile. And now it's, this guy's good. He's flexible. He's Canadian international. We think he has sell-on value. Clearly Nashville does as well. That seems to be a big part of the trade, was keeping a percentage of that. And I think for Montreal, one, you're getting a Canadian starter going into a World Cup year, which has value. Two, you're getting the exact player you needed. Now, I don't know exactly if it remains the back five. If Joel Waterman plays in the middle, Kamal Miller, I think you still have to figure that out. And maybe it's this Italian guy on loan. But Alistair Johnston and Kamal Miller as right center back and left center back, we've seen it work at the international level for a reason. And I think it can be awesome. And I like that Montreal has leaned into this identity. And I think to continue along that road was a good idea.
The fact that they added Gaetan Bong from Nottingham Forest, a properly French first name, Gaetan, you don't see that enough or often enough. Love that with Richie going the other way, but have to like what Montreal's doing. And again, I think we're fans of Wilf Nancy and the project there, and they're building from the back out, which should make it hard as hell to score goals against them. I wanted to point out a couple of moves I liked. Jan Grey Goose, who I'm a big fan of, who I thought was kind of discarded by Minnesota. I was a bit surprised to see that, but I think that's a player that San Jose has been lacking, that type of profile of a player. And I think he'll do well over there. And someone who I think was rumored to be in TSC's crosshairs, I'm impressed that Greg Vanney got his guy and Raheem Edwards, and they link back up with the Galaxy and him moving from LAFC. I think Raheem is someone who, maybe in that same vein of conversation, David, of how MLS has changed and like what it's meant. Like, he's been in this league now for quite a long time, and he's still pretty young, and he's got a hell of a lot of experience under his belt in a lot of different places, but there's definitely a usable player there. And I think there's a reason why his services were so highly sought after.
Yeah. And he seems like a player who needs the right setup, because I think position's still a question mark with him, but also needs confidence and needs like a group that believes in him. And Greg Vanney is the guy who gave him his debut, who pushed him into the professional game. And it seemed like was pretty devastated to have lost it when he did in Toronto. Yeah. So I think it's definitely the right setup. And that, again, is one of those moves where you say today, you know, Raheem Edwards going to the LA Galaxy doesn't change anyone's life or change the world, but in a year, you could look back and say, this is a really good MLS player, and he just needed the right setup. I think back to Diego Fagundes, who had really good stretches with New England, but probably had his best year of his professional career with Austin last year. And he, I think, needed to leave home, but also I think he needed to go to a club that didn't see him as he'd been seen since he was 15 years old, and sort of let him work for his spot again and figure his feet out at the pro level in a different way. And so I look at a guy like Raheem Edwards in a similar vein of like, does understand this league, is a veteran now, but can still change the way he affects games. And I think there's a decent chance he'll be big for them. Also, the Galaxy have like DP spots open that they haven't filled. So there's questions still now of what that team will look like going forward, which could be really interesting.
Before we wrap up this segment, I think Jose Altidore's future is something that we're still quite curious about. I saw not speculation, but people putting two and two together. He just got married to Sloane Stephens. Congrats to them. But I think home base is down in Florida, and that reunion perhaps or moving down to Orlando City FC would be logical. Have you heard anything? Where do you think he plays next year?
And the only thing it sounds like is it won't be in Toronto. Which means it's going to have to be a buyout. Yeah. It doesn't sound like it'll be an MLS, is what I think. Because if he gets bought out, I would be surprised if he plays in this league again. If he was willing to play in this league, I think he would have gotten traded, or he will get traded.
Even with the contract?
Well, even if he gets bought out, I assume he's still going to expect a sizable contract. I could be wrong, but I don't think that's really how players operate, which is, oh yeah, that other team's paying me, so don't worry. You don't have to pay me what I'm to earn. Now, it won't be at the number TFC's paying, but it'll still be some. And I think there is a way in which TFC could cover some of his costs, right? As a loan or whatever it is, for a team to bring him in. So I think if he was going to play in MLS, he would be traded and not bought out. I could be completely wrong about this. I have no idea. It's just my guess and my assumption. It feels like Josie thinks he can still play. And it feels like Josie thinks if he plays well, he could still get into the national team, which I don't think is wrong. Like, if he comes out of whatever the next few months and start banging in goals going into a World Cup or going into World Cup qualifying, yeah, there's no reason to think he wouldn't get back in there. I love that Pepe went to Augsburg, but it's going to be hard for him getting there. And does Daryl Dike hit the ground running at West Brom? Like, there are still question marks around that position for the U.S. So it makes sense that Josie still has that mindset. And that's the other reason I think it sort of looks that way, is can he find a club that's like very targeted with what they want to do, whether it's in Liga MX or in Europe, of we need goals for the next 3 months starting now. Here's your chance. And this is not like about building a long-term future with you.
It's literally the million or millions dollar question that we should find out soon. But yeah, I think you're safe to say Josie is not coming back to Toronto. I think I could confirm that as well. So there we are. Anything else, DG, before we move on?
You asked about moves that interest me, and I was trying to rack my brain, and I came back around to one, which was Julian Carranza, designated player from Miami, loaned to Philadelphia with an option to buy. So Philadelphia, who has been a low-spending team, is getting basically a free year of a designated player to decide if he's the guy that fits for them. And they've been pretty cheap on the attacking side. And Jim Curtin has, I think, gotten about as much as he could out of them. And this is kind of the only type of move it felt like they would make at forward. And so it's an intelligent move from them to just read the tea leaves and say, Inter Miami's in trouble. How can we take advantage of it? It's a unique move because we've never really seen anything like this. We obviously have had a few times where teams were had too many DPs and had to try and find a way to move them, but not at this age and not with the investment that was put into Carranza. So this is a unique setup in MLS, and Philadelphia shouldn't be as cheap as they are. I don't think being successful while not spending should complement you to not spend.
Yeah.
Like Philadelphia, one, is one of the five biggest cities in America. And if you're selling players and making money, then you can have money to spend because you've sold those players. And I am fine with a good chunk of that going back into the academy, but it has to be more than that. And I think there has to be a requirement to be competitive. But this is a really interesting move. And if this hits, I mean, Julian Carranza, we're talking $6 million signing from Argentina, Argentine Youth International. If this hits, now all of a sudden you're looking at a team that could be starting Gazdag, who's a Hungarian international, Jamiro Montero, who's started today for Cape Verde African Nations Cup, and Julian Carranza as your attacking three in front of
pretty good,
arguably the best D-mid in the league, Leon Flock, Bedoya, Jack McGlynn. So it could be really impressive, or he could be a bust, because sometimes when players come on loan, the player and the team aren't really committed to each other, and it doesn't work out. So it could be really interesting.
Just quickly, I'm amazed Phil Neville's still there. I did not think he was going to be sticking around for this project.
You thought he'd leave, or you thought they'd fire him?
Yeah, I thought he'd be like, F this. Like, I can rebuild somewhere else.
Yeah.
But hey, he's back. So we'll see what he does in 2022.
Have you ever seen the stuff about him and his family with Phil Neville?
That they get on? That they don't get on?
No. So he like has been quoted as saying, like, I don't really want, I just like me and my family to hang out. I don't really like to hang out with other people. I don't really love when my kids hang out with friends. Like, it's just us. We're like a unit and we just do our own thing.
Are they huge? Is this like a Phil Rivers situation? Is he have 7 to 8 kids?
I don't think so. Oh, I think God. It's there's what, how many is Phil Rivers? 17
nine.
Kids?
Nine. I think kids. He's got nine, yeah. Man. Yeah.
Nine.
I'll look it up, but yeah, I think they only have like 3 or 4 kids, but he's very like committed, which credit to you, and that's great. So maybe he doesn't care where he is or what team he coaches because he just wants to be hanging out with his family.
It all makes sense now. Awesome. Okay, shouts to the Neville family. When we come back to AFP, we hit the international circuit, news out of Germany, news out of AFCON, where that tournament is going on, all of that coming up next. Welcome back to AFP. We hit Europe first, gentlemen. CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers coming up very quickly, and the Canadian national team has a bunch of players in the news. Unfortunately, it sounds like Alphonso Davies will not be part of the Canadian squad for these 3 games coming up at the end of January. Fonzie was diagnosed with myocarditis after contracting COVID-19. His coach, Julian Nagelsmann, says it's hard to tell when he'll be back exactly, but he's definitely not training now. I think with the way the schedule works, we're talking about almost less than 2 weeks before these games, guys. And I don't think it's safe to say that Fonzie will be there. I think we're operating under the assumption he won't be, but it's a huge loss. And I mean, the US game alone is tough, but there's 2 massive trips in this round as well, where they have to go to places where they haven't had a lot of success, including Honduras. In a weird way, do you think them knowing this early will be okay for Herdman and crew, David? Do you think if they have this knowledge that they're going to be without their talisman now, they can devise a way to play without him?
I think it probably changes the lineups that John Herdman's planning to play over the course of the window, of course. But either way, Alphonso Davies is probably the best player in this region. There is no reason that Canada shouldn't be able to get the same level of results without him in this window. That doesn't mean they don't need Alphonso Davies. That doesn't mean he's not important. It just means that this team has proven that there is enough depth across the roster, and there are specific players that can fill in and do the things that Alphonso Davies has brought to the team to get results. You can't look at first of all, the performance in the Gold Cup, but the performance at Mexico, home to Mexico, at Jamaica. You can't look at those games and say that there's not enough talent on over the across this roster to get results, right, Devang?
I agree, and I think Stephen Caldwell was kind of reassuring me last week, and maybe I'm a bit too down on the team as a whole or not taking them seriously enough, even though they're first in the group and shocking multiple people by the game. But I do think psychologically it's a big loss, and I wonder having the best player, quote-unquote, in CONCACAF, like we keep saying, helps infuse the team with a sort of confidence that they just don't have without him. There's a lot of big game players, though, on this team, like you mentioned, and I think based on what we've seen, I should be more confident. I just think to where they're going and who they're playing, these three games, and it's a cliche, and the next game is the most important, but I just think these three games are massive. And to consolidate on where they're on the table, I know it's probably New Zealand for the fourth place team, and it's not a death sentence if you come there like it could have been if they got a bad draw, but I still think finishing where they are in this group would be such a huge boost. And I wonder now if it's realistic to think that Canada can come first if they're missing Fonzie for these three games. I'm a bit skeptical.
Yeah, and I think that's fair, and I think the psychological side of the Honduras game is fair. You know, Honduras, at this point, it feels like are out. I think Cotto's been fired already, so they fired their coach. Like, it's a team in mess, but at the same time, it's the bogey game, and then you add the USA game to that, and then another trip back down to Central America. But remember, Kyle Larin was out that string of games right. When you had the Panama win, you had the Jamaica tie, and you had the Mexico tie on the road. So you've already shown that you can fill in for players. And I think, to me, there's a few things that stand out. One is the performance of Tejan Buchan at the Gold Cup, to me, solidified there is another game changer in this team. And so you have more than can start. And that means you do have flexibility that didn't exist a year ago, because I think Tejan can do a lot of the things for this team that Davies can do. I also think Larin has taken on even more ownership, as well as playing well in Turkey, to the point where he can be a guy that you can play through and win games. And so if you bring Larin back into the team, you can use him or Jonathan David or Tejan across that front line.
For sure. And I think Richie would be a focal point as well, even more so than he is in that attacking fullback role and creating from that position. You're right. I think there's ways. And I, knowing this early, I think if they found out they would be out without Fonzie on January 25th, it's a bit of a different story. But I think having this runway and an ability to plan, and they've shown that this coaching staff can put together a hell of a tactical plan. I'm confident that they'll figure it out. But obviously, it's a big loss. We wish him all the best. And it sounds, fortunately, like this is a mild case and he will make a recovery. But it's scary shit. Like, when it's your heart, you want to be really careful. And I hope, I'm sure he's getting incredible care in Germany. Junior Hoilett was injured this week. I've been watching some Reading games because Andy Carroll's there as well, and it's some banter. There's some hilarious. But Andy Carroll scoring two amazing golazos that did not count. Either of them was a highlight.
Like the tall Andy weeks, Carroll, the same guy,
the big one, big boy Andy Carroll. Yeah, he's still showing out. But Junior was playing well as well, and he took a knock. We hope that's nothing serious. Jonathan David returned for Lille after being out with COVID protocols. It sounds like outside of Fonzie, though, they should be all right. I saw Stefan Eustachio link with Porto, which should be an absolutely warranted move, a well-warranted move. I saw a friend of the show, Ollie Platt, post on Twitter. He's like, this guy plays in the spine for one of the best teams in CONCACAF. He's 25 years old. He's playing for a relatively small Portuguese club on nothing wages. Why isn't he being linked with more clubs other than Porto? And I'm like, yeah, I think I saw briefly Liverpool randomly last year, but it was like a complete tabloid article. But I do ask that question to all of you. Why isn't there more buzz for Eustach?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think to me, from the outside, it felt like two things. One was it took him so long to kind of find his feet with a professional team that I think teams want to see more than 1 year. And the other was it felt like maybe he didn't want to go. It felt like maybe he was comfortable and wasn't ready to push for the move. Because if he's pushing, I agree that, like, why wouldn't, first of all, he's phenomenal. And second of all, he's already done it in that league. Why wouldn't a bigger team in that league look at him as a player that can, you know, be an option for them if he's already doing it? But at the same time, and this is not exactly apples to apples, look at what Ryan Gold has done. And he was sitting at the bottom of the Portuguese league as well in a relegated team. And it made no sense to me either. So there's probably some weird stuff going on in Portugal that we're not totally understanding, but Nick can obviously explain more of it to us.
It's confusing to me. I feel like it has to do a lot with hype in terms of these players. Like Jonathan David is a great example for this. Before he started like scoring amazing goals with Lille, everyone thought, oh, he might be a bust, whatever it is. But when you play with such a small team in Portugal, I don't think like the new, like people aren't really looking or scoping you out. And it's confusing to me though, however, because like you play for Canada and you're one of the biggest cogs in their machine and no one's taking a flyer on you other than Porto. Like it's beyond bizarre, but I really think it comes down to just the team that you're playing for. I don't know. Maybe it scares big clubs away because it's like, why is this guy here? But I mean, we've seen the talent, so it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. The Portuguese league is a league that most teams are scouting. I mean, it's
right. Yeah.
In general exists as a leap or, you know, as a stepping stone, but most teams outside of Portugal that we would consider higher level do not normally bring players out of Portugal that aren't already at the big teams, which is why the Porto move matters, because it's very rare to see a team in the Premier League, La Liga, pull players that isn't Porto, Benfica, Sporting, maybe a Braga. But outside of that, most of the players either go to a Belgium, a second division somewhere else, Netherlands, and then go higher than they do come straight from, I don't know, Boa Vista, Vitória, one of those clubs, and then go to that high level. So it's why I think for Eustáquio, he's a little bit stuck, because you need to be a player that Porto or Benfica want or Sporting. Otherwise, you kind of need to wait around until a team maybe is in a tough financial spot and then they start coming to look for players where it's cheaper. And that's kind of where you sort of see teams at the bottom of Serie A, when they're in trouble, start to maybe try and pull players from Portugal.
In other Canadian national team news, Scott Arfield retired from national team duty. Neil Davidson in the Canadian Press wrote a great article on Arfield calling it with the national team. I just wanted to say another one of those guys that I think him making the decision to play for Canada and the way that he found out he could play, or that they figured this out. He was chatting with David Edgar at a birthday party for Sam Vokes, which is like the most random soccer fandom thing you could ask for. And he mentioned about his Canadian bloodlines, and from there they figured out he could represent the country. Like, I just love that story about him choosing to play for them in 2016 at a time where there was very little buzz and it was definitely not cool, was big. I remember this is a Premier League player choosing to play for Canada. It'll put everyone's antennas up, but great soldier. I think everyone that I've talked to that knows him only had good things to say, and he's left this program in a better place than he's found it. So I would salute Scott Arfield.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think we've sort of talked about it with Junior Hoylett as well, but I think for the two of them, they were definitely two players who started to change the culture and gave, whether it was them recruiting themselves or just giving the Canadian Federation sort of a leg to stand on in going to recruit these dual nationals and say, look, people have chosen, it's worked out for them. There is quality in this group. They were both massive. And now it feels like Marcelo Flores and Jebison and all this stuff, it's like, well, anyone could, you know, pick. And yeah, I think
it's great.
4 or 5 years ago, all of us were like, there's no chance anyone's picking Canada. It always felt like they were losing.
Pleading with guys, pleading with them, please represent Canada, please. And now there's a bit more leverage. No, huge. Again, a lot of people paying it forward.
Well, I'm going to take us in a random place, but it will sort of connect to what we're going to talk about later. Is that fine?
Perfect.
So there's a player on Cape Verde, Roberto Lopes. He found out that he could play for the Cape Verde national team because his teammate at Shamrock Rovers found out he could play for Morocco, I think, and was doing an interview about it. And he walked into the interview and he goes, oh, you can play for Morocco? Maybe I should play for Cape Verde. And then Like the interviewer, I think, put it in the story, and then they went and found him on Facebook, and the manager for Cape Verde messaged him on Facebook, and then like 3 years later, he made his debut, and now he starts for them as center back. So,
wow! Thank you, Mark Zuckerberg, for your infinite wisdom. Thank
for your service.
Tejan played for Club Bruges, 90 started and played all 90 minutes at left wing back. I didn't watch the whole game. I don't know if any of you guys caught the whole game, but just generally it looked like a conservative but strong performance.
Yeah. Yeah, he looked a little timid, but I mean, it's your first game in Europe, so I would expect that, but there were still some flashes. But I'm really excited to see him in Club Bruges. I think it's a real, real solid move for him. And right off the bat, playing 90 minutes, can't complain.
Right. And playing at wingback's interesting. Obviously, he broke through for New England there, but then hadn't played it much. And I think off the ball, there are still holes in his game. And having experience playing at wingback could help him solve some of those problems of, you know, staying engaged off the ball, working hard defensively. I think you saw it in the playoff game, even though he scored a goal for the Revs against NYCFC. He sort of let himself come out of the game. I think he was a bit frustrated with calls and his touch wasn't on. And I think he can be a player who, even when he's off, can still affect the game because he has such gravity to him, because he can do such amazing things out of nowhere. And so I think that's a really good spot for him to sort of develop a little bit more.
Shouts to the MK Don himself, Theo Kobanu, for an absolute golazo for them. He's glowing up too.
Another player who could fill in for Alphonso Davies.
Right. And at the perfect time, really. I saw some people maybe voicing concern about the MLS players not being in shape or not being at the peak of their abilities for this next window, and having guys who are playing regularly and performing well would be good to have. There's one for you right there that we could see playing for Canada in some big games coming up. I won't dwell on the Ricardo Pepe horror miss for Augsburg, David, but you can address that quickly if you like.
No, that feels offensive. So I'm not even going to, I'm just going to say he's 18 years old. He started a game in the Bundesliga, and from what I saw like a solid 25 plus minutes of it. He was getting in the areas where he's effective. He was playing his game. And it seems like as he gets comfortable, his game will work at that level. And I think those are the things I'm looking for early on. Obviously, with the money they spent and the situation they're in, Augsburg is looking for results right now from him, which is wild, but exciting. But I think for me, watching that game, it felt like, okay, I can see how Ricardo Pepi can work at this level.
I'm only bantering. I hope he does well as well, and I buy that. I'm buying the Pepi stock, guys.
You hate him, and quickly, when he succeeds, I'm going to rub it in your face every day.
It's fair. AFCON is going on right now. I mean, a great tournament and a tournament full of storylines that I think deserves more coverage in our part of the woods. But I picked up Fubo TV, not an advertisement, but I picked it up. With the Premier League news, but I can also watch AFCON now, so I've been watching a bunch on BN. We had that the madness, the referee in Tunisia Mali calling the game way too early, definitely using a Timex or some sort of off-brand Casio, and not the real thing. There, that was incredible. Algeria struggling a bit. Gabon. Gabon doing well and potentially winning their group without their freaking captain, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who is now back in London, is pretty wild. And there's some rumors about that and whether or not it is actually illness related. What's caught your eye, DG, from this tournament so far?
I think you had the first round plus of games was really the fact that most players were not released by their clubs until basically 2 days before the tournament, plus a lot of third place teams. The four of the six best third place teams get through. I think you saw teams sort of playing in second and third gear and not really opening it up and pushing. And it's led to some weird results. And I think it's led to a lot of the quote unquote smaller teams who are going all out to kind of push some of the big teams. You mentioned Algeria. They came in the tournament. If they went undefeated in the group stage, which for a team that just won the last African Nations Cup and is considered the best team in the continent, isn't unheard of. They would have broken Italy's record for the longest undefeated streak in international soccer history that Italy just set through Euros into losing to Spain in the Nations League. That's it. And they lost to Equatorial Guinea. They drew in the opening game against Sierra Leone, who are making their debut in AFCON, have never been in this competition before. And then they lost in this, and Kai Kamara doing his thing. And then they lost in the second game to Equatorial Guinea. It is mind blowing. And that's why I love international soccer, because I think it's really in a tournament where you only have to do it for two or three games. It's really where you get to see situations like this, plus how much it means to some of these countries and sort of the camaraderie that is able to be built around it. So that is such a cool story, and the Gambia as well. And we had Pamo Udaka on right before Christmas, and he's from the Gambia, and he sort of talked a little bit about the soccer culture there, but they're also in their debut AFCON, and they're currently sitting on 4 points in first place in a group that has Mali and Tunisia as well. And they're playing Tunisia in this final group stage game. So these are just some of the cool stories that we've seen. And a lot of young players starting to show themselves. And what's weird is it's one of those tournaments where not all the best players have been able to come from every team. And so it's been cool to see who's stepped up. And I think we've seen it for Cameroon and Nigeria. You know, some of the less expected names, obviously Osimhen and Dennis weren't released for this one. Osimhen coming down with COVID, it sounds like, so he couldn't go. And now you're seeing Chukwueze step forward and have a good tournament, and Ndidi as well. And Iheanacho, who I don't know what, he's still like 24, is still sort of finding his feet. But this is the best we've ever seen him play for Nigeria.
I want to apologize to my Ghanaian friends for kind of hoping that they don't get a result against Comoros so Thomas Partey could come back, but I don't think I think Arsenal has one game for the rest of AFCON during this, so go win this, Ghana. I apologize for that. Also, I did like seeing Nicolas Pepe be able to show out for Cote d'Ivoire after having a tough year and not being able to play a lot. Attitude-wise, I never doubted him, and I think people maybe consider him like not docile, but like he's not an in-your-face guy, and I think that makes them question his commitment. But I don't think you can question his readiness, and he's showing that he can play with a pretty damn good team alongside him and some players who are really informed, Sebastian Haller included. But that draw was a shock. You mentioned David Sierra Leone getting some massive results. Still a lot of runway to go for this tournament. Should be great.
Yeah. So I think. So you mentioned Haller and Pepe. Zaha didn't even start the first game and starts alongside them in the front three for Ivory Coast. And this is considered a down moment in Ivory Coast like history over the last 30 years, obviously since sort of the Drogba golden generation. So it just shows you the talent that comes out of Ivory Coast and like consistently is wild. And they've got a great final group stage game coming up as well. So I think this tournament's really going to feel like it started once we get out of the group stage, but yet we've still had these wild upsets.
Amazing. All right. We will wrap up episode 77 with the mailbag Ask AFP coming up next.
Welcome back. And now it's time for Ask AFP. Thanks to everyone who sent their questions this week. If you didn't get the chance to send in your own questions, just hop on Twitter and use the hashtag AskAFP and send them our way. Our first question goes to Tiny Dancer, and they ask, what do you make of all these postponements in England? Fans have been very outraged by teams requesting to have their games postponed. Devang, Arsenal and Spurs recently, that's happened to them. I know Liverpool as well against Arsenal. What's your opinion on this?
Well, hold me closer, Tiny Dancer, because I have a story to tell. I saw a lot of Spurs fans losing their minds over the North London Derby being postponed on Sunday. Arsenal very flimsily being able to apply to the Premier League for a postponement. And it turns out the Granit Xhaka karate kick tackle was why we were able to do that, because he had a red card and couldn't play. I have two minds of this. I think it's happened to Arsenal as well. And if you look way back at the beginning of the season, that Brentford game to start the year, they were missing a bunch of players and they didn't get that game called off. I think the rule is the problem. It's not the teams trying to apply it. I think if you look at the rules, they're within their rights, clubs like Arsenal, to do this. But I do understand the anger that the rules are what they are. I think we just get into a really hazy middle ground, David, of like choosing between what warrants it and what doesn't, and what's real and what's not. You get into false positives and all sorts of other things. Like, I think this is the Premier League's own making and the bed that they have to sleep in now because of how loose these are.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you'd assume you're in a spot where a professional sports team, if they're capable of competing, would compete. Like, that'd be your hope, right? And if that's not the case, then you'd assume they're asking for it for the right reasons. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. I think this is part of... this whole thing's a bit of a mess right now, and sort of just the decision has been made from a year and a half back that they're just going to knuckle through and just try and get to the end. And listen, Man City won the league and there's still competition across the other spots. But like, I wonder how different it would be if there was a 3-horse race for first and you're looking at, well, when, you know, Brentford doesn't have enough players and I'm just making one up. Them playing Chelsea affects City and Liverpool for the title. And I wonder, without having something like that, that sort of makes the Premier League feel like they can, you know, dirty river walk, get their way through this.
The competitive balance is completely effed. Like, it's done. Like, it's not good, I don't think, generally, for the league. And maybe not the first place, but that fourth spot, the games in hand, and whenever they're going to play those games, it's going to be quite a jumble.
Yeah, it's a mess, but it seems like that's the only solution that the people who run this thing feel like works.
Well, the FA is always known to make amazing decisions. Gabo asks, with the Insigne signing, do you like the idea of one big DP, or would you want three defenders for the cost of Insigne? So that's building teams versus the stars.
Yeah, I think this is really interesting. Sam Stajskal, friend of the show, I think put out a pretty big piece going into MLS Cup about this, about the restrictions and spending. And I think when Insigne got signed, like, this was a huge reaction was, well, they don't have center backs, why would they sign Insigne? And it's like, well, it doesn't matter. Like, once he hits his cap threshold, he's hitting the cap at $625,000. After that, it's coming out of someone else's pocket and doesn't affect the competitive nature of your team. Now, yeah, you could spend on scouting and health sciences and analytics. And there are things you can spend money on outside of your salary cap. But in reality, you are kind of stuck. And I can see both sides, Devang. I can see you're still trying to star build a league. And so creating mechanisms where owners have to sign a big name rather than a group of solid players, I can get. But on the flip side, as someone who watches a lot of games week in and week out, I'd love to see a more competitive roster top to bottom, or a more competitive 11 rather than Insigne and Miguel Almirón and, you know, Sebastian Blanco and those guys.
I think that's fair, but I think I'm of the mind that if you can, you should. Like, if you can make this investment, you should. And you can figure out the rest later. And I think Insigne specifically, this is about kind of reviving something in a market that you saw what it could be like at full flight. And people have fond memories of that, but it shouldn't be something that is rested on. And I appreciate the fact that they didn't. So though they might concede a boatload of goals and still be a disaster at the back, I think the idea of making this swing is... it's what makes the league the league. And without swings like this, it would be noticeable, I think. Without the ambition that clubs like TFC is showing here, the league would be worse off. So I understand the merits for club building, and I don't think they have to be separate. I think you can see there is some history that shows that there is a way to blend them. But I think in terms of what to do in this offseason, is it big signing or build methodically? I think you go big signing.
Yeah. And I think, I think the league would be better off if all 27 teams had a player, you know, at that quality. Right. Not every team is committed to it. And that's where you get then into the other weird part of like, well, if Philly's not going to spend, would they be willing to spend on two higher level defenders than this? And can you create, you know, flexibility for them to do it, which I think we're starting to see with the way allocations being traded with teams like Colorado and Montreal and all that. But I understand what you mean. And the other thing is for Toronto, there is nothing else. They can't get out of the contracts that already exist. So it's Insigne or no Insigne. It's not right. Insigne or these defenders. The question is, would you change the structure going forward? Which I think neither of us, maybe Nick does, but I don't think either of us have that in our job descriptions.
Bring in the stars no matter what. That's what I say.
Stars, yeah. Baby.
Ruin the team. If all that, I don't care. Just bring in the stars. I want to see these big players play. The last question is from me. And again, DeBang mentioned off the top of the show that we reached 100,000 listens. And that also predates to Sean's iteration of the show with Stevie and KJ. So I kind of want to reminisce and go down memory lane and ask you guys what your favorite memories of the show or what you enjoy about the show. I'm going to go first here and say, since we started, I've been trying to figure out who David cheers for apart from the international circuit. I've come to the conclusion, regardless of what he says about coaches, he is a fan of Atletico Madrid. That is my guess. After all this time and research that we've done. Also, his three favorite international teams are the U.S., Suriname, and now Cape Verde.
Nice. none of that sounds inaccurate. So I think you get full points for that. I'm definitely an Atletico Madrid fan. I can say this, which you guys hadn't figured out. I came into soccer being a USA fan, and then I was at first an Arsenal fan. Actually,
whoa,
which would sway the tide of this. And I have not felt strongly emotionally about that in quite a long time. And then when I was in high school, I played soccer in Madrid, Spain. My coach was a former Atletico Madrid player, and we went to the stadium and all that stuff. And that's where I sort of became connected with that club. And I've rooted for them for the last 14, 15 years. So, yeah, wow. Nice job, Nick.
This is like finding out I had a long lost brother that I never knew existed. And then now, after all these years, I found out I'm not alone. Great question. You put me on the spot, Nick. I would say we started this during or our iteration of the show all remote as well, right? So we didn't really get the face-to-face experience. But those first few shows of doing this and kind of basically figuring out what you guys are all about and figuring out what David's all about and kind of understanding that slowly, like, oh, wait a minute, these guys are tops. And like, though I was not totally sure if this was going to work before, I slowly understood that it would because you guys are on it and you talk about the game well and you have good opinions and you're good people and it shone through pretty quickly. So I think just that realization and how much fun I have doing the show was awesome to kind of just come into that on the fly and figure out as we went. But I think I said this before, but like it's I'm lucky to be able to do this, especially during a very hard 2 years plus that we've been through and my own personal challenges as well with my smashing of the jaw. I'm fortunate. So I would like to thank both of you lads.
Yeah, I would echo that. I would say when we started this show and remote, as you said, it was kind of a time in the world where it was like people had very strong different opinions and I wasn't sure I could stomach being around people who had specific other opinions and you never know what people are like. And then Nick, I met you later on, but DeVang meeting you and us starting to like talk about stuff and I'm a New Yorker. I just say things out loud and you would be on board or you would say the thing I was going to say before it. And I was like, oh, okay, this guy sort of like shares my mind with stuff. And I don't know that we would be able to do the show if the three of us weren't on the same page like we are. And I think I see it in the group chat all the time. And that's what makes me excited is like, you know, there's good people and there's less good people. And I think we luckily all found each other or thanks to Clay and Sean as well for putting us together. And so it's been awesome. I would say the highlight of the show has been finding out DeVang was super tall and Nick was super short. That was an unexpected moment for me.
Meeting Nick in the corridors of BMO Field and the darkened hallways of BMO Field for a beer was one of the highlights for sure.
It really was, especially our embrace and you leaning down to talk to me because of how short I was and how tall you are.
You know how that makes me feel, though? As feeling like an ogre of some sort, it was very Shrek 2 or Shrek 3 feeling.
So basically, we're Shrek and the donkey. That's great. Awesome.
Perfect. Amazing on that feel-good moment of our favorite movie collectively, which we all should admit is Shrek 2. We're going to go a reminder to please rate or review this podcast wherever you get it. It helps get the show into more people's ears, which we would appreciate. So if you can, please do that. We're on Twitter as well, @AFootballPod. If you've noticed me retweeting spicy anti-other teams in the Prem stuff from the AFP account, that's me. You better believe it. I've got the keys now. So watch out. Your fellow club could be next. And we're on patreon.com/AFootballPodcast. Yes, David.
What? Do you want to now give us about a solid 45 minutes on Australian immigration law and COVID-19 and vaccine?
I don't want to talk about that guy for a while. We're on patreon.com/AFootballPodcast. Like I said, get on the Discord, get the show ad free, get it early as well when we record. It's a great deal and it helps us keep the lights on. So if you can, please sign up there. And that's it. A major thank you, as always, to producer Greg on the ones and twos. And for Nick and David, thank you so much for listening to AFP. We'll talk to you next week.